Hi, it's Diane, and it is Tuesday, April 1st. It's April Fool's Day. Uh-oh, we need to have an April Fool's Day joke from somebody, I think. Anybody got a good joke?
No, I don't.
Okay, so my favorite stupid joke has this. So why do Eskimos wash their clothes in Tide?
I don't know.
Because it's too cold outside.
Ha, ha, ha.
Hey, Liz, how are you?
Good, how are you?
You just missed my joke. You'll have to go back. You'll have to go back and listen to the recording. I decided that we needed an April Fool's joke, so I told a silly joke. So we got Meredith and Leslie and Liz on, and why don't we check in and see how things are going for folks? Who wants to check in first?
This is Leslie. Things are not too bad. So,
what's not so bad about it?
Pardon me?
What's not so bad about it?
We've had a fairly good, I mean, better than what we usually have, couple of weeks. Have had some upsets, but handled them a little differently. Is it great? I don't know, but it's definitely wasn't too bad.
How did you do on compassion, Leslie?
Good and not so good. So it's like, I go back and forth between doing okay on that and then just wanting him to be 18 years old and I'm angrily packing his suitcases and tossing him out the door.
how normal is that? It's perfectly understandable. And you take a few steps closer, and I think that, just being more conscious of having compassion makes all the difference.
Well, and the big thing is that, I'm trying not to verbalize those feelings because that would be a terrible thing to say. So.
Well, that is completely normal. So how about anybody else? How did you, Liz, how have you been doing for the last couple weeks?
Well, I've really been missing having the coaching calls, not being able to participate in the last two, and I'm realizing that how valuable they are in helping me stay on track and check in with myself and not go off the rails. And I feel like overall we've been making progress, but it's easy to slide down that slippery slope if you aren't mindful and if you're stressed out.
Well, and thanks for sharing that. I think it's a good reminder for all of us because there are times that we can't come to a session or we can't, we have a hard time with our homework. And sometimes it's just the discipline of it and saying, okay, for an hour every other week, I'm going to focus in on my parenting and my relationship with my ADD kid. And so I would encourage, and this is a public service announcement for those of you who are listening, it's like take the time. And a suggestion from somebody the other day is kind of like, what if every Tuesday from 12 to 1, whatever time zone you're in, but 12 to 1 East Coast time, was your time to focus in on you and your parenting? And so when we're not here on that Tuesday, spend an hour doing something else, whether it's self-care or whether it's, doing some of the structured sorts of stuff that we need to do so often for our kids. But if you get into that commitment and you get into that accountability where it becomes a habit, it's like, going to church every Sunday morning, or it's like going to the gym three times a week. I mean, it takes the practice and it takes the rigor to get into the habit. So what did you find that worked for you the best, Liz, while you were off, quote unquote?
I think what's been helpful is that what I've been sharing with my husband, who's ADHD, and I think it's finally starting to kick in with him to where he's being more thoughtful in his interactions and trying not to react or take things personally. And so I think that has been a great support and a reminder to me.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. And sometimes we come with one purpose and another one shows up.
Yes.
So, Elizabeth, I want to let you know that I saw you. How are things going?
Oh, hi. They're going. My husband's listening in on the call today, too.
Oh, awesome. Tell us your husband's name so we can recognize him.
Cy.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Cy. C-Y. Cy.
Hi. Hi, Cy. Glad you're with us today. This is Cyan. How have things been going with compassion? Elizabeth, have you been working on that for the last couple of weeks?
Well, I missed the call also last week, if you recall, but compassion, you know, I mean, it's a lifesaver. That's all I can say. My husband and I were just talking about how much we love our son. We just love him with all our heart and soul. And even though we do, we oftentimes just either, we just forget. You know, we just forget that his brain works differently. We keep trying to make him normal and respond to him as a normal or what we think is a normal person. And every time we do, well, not every time, but in times of trouble, we get in a hot mess, like you say, when we forget that his brain works differently.
Well, and it's hard because I've heard somebody say that ADHD is almost an invisible diagnosis because there's nothing, you know, on the outside that remind you, and they are often so brilliant and so smart and do so well academically, but then the executive function stuff shows up and it you know, counterbalances it, and so it's easy to do. But congratulations for remembering that, Elizabeth. I think that's an important piece to focus in on.
Thank you.
Meredith, how are things going for you?
I can't say that I recall actively thinking about being compassionate. I mean, I know I'm trying to kind of stay calm, and I think I said this last time, but it almost feels like more sort of removing myself and observing, which I don't know if that's the right thing to do. I mean, not getting emotionally caught up in whatever is going on. Mm-hmm. I just can't figure out, and maybe it's not to be figured out, I can't figure out how to, sure, I can change my behavior, but that's not ultimately going to change his behavior, right? It may change the way we interact or, you know, which is all a positive end, but the things that he needs to modify in order to be a successful human being are not going to change because I'm being compassionate. And so it's just frustrating because I just feel like it's Groundhog Day. I mean, you know, and I have no basis for comparison to know what other people are living in. It's not like this is the most horrible situation in the world or by any means, but I can't figure out how to create success, right?
Well, I hear what you're saying. I think that that's this kind of fine line between what you own and what he owns, and you're trying to work through the balance of that. But I'm going to challenge your comment about compassion not being necessarily that direct of a tool, because I got to tell you, I've seen firsthand that it's that compassion and that ability to understand and see how difficult it is for our kids, and the fact that they don't, you know, to really step into their shoes for a second, that at least for me and for many of my clients does make the difference, because you're not sitting there trying to put them into a square hole. You know, you see that they're a round peg and you're like, okay, how do I help this round peg instead of trying to help them from the hole? Does that, you know, the square hole. Does that make any sense as I'm saying it?
Yeah, I guess I'm just not really seeing it in my own life. I mean, you know, I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but for instance, with having homework to do or things to get done, you know, I've gone the route in the last week of saying, all right, do you want, let's sit down together, let's sort of map out what you need to do, and let's figure out the best way, you know, for you to get it done and also have time to do other stuff you want to do. You know, that's one approach we've taken. Another approach is sort of throughout the day constantly saying, remember, you know, you have X to do, make sure you leave time. And inevitably it gets to be 9:30 at night and, you know, the final things have not been done because despite constant conversation about it throughout the weekend, he's opted, consciously opted, I would say, to some extent, not to focus on what, you know, on the thing that he's, that he needs to be focused on. And I don't know where the ADHD starts and the, like, laziness starts and the, you know, it's just hard to work with it.
It is, because it's a little bit of both, right? And so I'm going to play with compassion piece for a minute, because we haven't started on this topic for this week yet. But if you were going to have compassion for him and you were going to see it from his perspective, and here's a kid, and I don't know if it was a weekend or whether it was an evening, but, you know, if you could really get and understand why it made perfect sense that he didn't finish his work until the last minute, how would that feel?
Say that again, if what?
What if it made perfect sense that he didn't do it until the last minute?
What if it did make perfect? I mean, yeah. I'm sure there's circumstances under which it would make perfect sense, but in this case it didn't.
But it did, because he did. I mean, I think that that's the thing. It's like that was his, that's what happened. So it makes perfect sense, cause and effect. It makes perfect sense that it would happen that way. Yeah, maybe it would have been easier for you if it hadn't happened that way. Maybe it would have gotten done earlier if it hadn't happened that way. But if there's not a motivator in place, or if he's not feeling like it's a good use of his time at the moment, or if he's having a difficult time focusing in, or, you know, there's, you know, 17 different things, but the question is, you know, how can we understand that it makes perfect sense that it didn't happen? And so it's not about trying to understand why it didn't happen. It's about getting to the point where we recognize that left to their own vices, our kids are not going to do it. I had a client I talked to this morning, and they, you know, he's a freshman in high school. They had something to do during the morning. They left him with all the assignments. Everything was written down. Everything was, all the papers were printed out, and they came home, and next to nothing was done. Well, this is not a kid who can realistically motivate himself through the process of getting his homework done without a parent there doing reminders or some kind of reminder system or some kind of structure. And so it makes perfect sense that it didn't get done. Doesn't mean it's not frustrating that it didn't get done, but it makes perfect sense because from an expectation perspective, they couldn't really expect that he would be able to do it, because he couldn't, or he would have, because he's the kind of kid that does the best he can do. So I don't know how that resonates with you, Meredith, but I'm curious.
You know, one side of me says, yeah, I get it. I get all that. The other side of me says, the rest of the world doesn't really care, and you've got to figure out a way to make it work.
Okay.
Or I just have to accept the fact that my child's going to underperform his entire life, which is really hard for me. That's my
problem. Well, and I guess, Yeah, no, and that makes sense. And it's a logical conclusion that if he's struggling at his age, that he'll continue to struggle as an adult. I mean, that's a logical concern and a worry. At the same time, I know that you're working with him. I mean, you're making an investment in your family. You're making an investment of your time, and you're doing what, you know, you're making changes that are helping to move him forward. And it may not happen overnight, and it may not happen when he's 17. It may not happen when he's 18. Who knows when it'll happen? But, you know, the goal is to get him to independence. And the question is, what's the trajectory, not whether it will happen or not. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's kind of like, I think I talked about this last time, it's the same thing with your child, you know, diaper training. You know, like, I remember I had a friend who was pregnant at the same time I was, and her daughter was out of diapers at 18 months, which was just, like, unheard of, right? And so here I have this son who's going to be in diapers till he's 20, I was convinced. But eventually he was on a trajectory, and he was out of diapers by the time he was four, by the time he, you know, had to be at pre-K, like we all want them to be. But, you know, when we start comparing them to the girl who was potty trained at 18 months, I wasn't helping him to learn how to get out of diapers, because I was focused on what he should have been able to do that he can't. And it would take the eye off the ball, which is, how can I help this child to learn when he's ready? And I realized at some point, it's like, he's not ready. I'm gonna wait a year, and then I'm gonna try again. Or I'm wait 2 years, and I'm gonna try again. So it's about you know, knowing that they won't graduate in diapers, but that, you know, that you've got to be patient with the process and take him where he's at, and not where you want him to be. If that makes sense. And that's really, I think, where the compassion can really help. It's about trusting that our kids do have a good heart, and they do want to do as well as they can, and it's literally just helping them figure it out. Okay, so I'm going to shift gears here, and we're going to all take AIM, because that's where we start. Just so I'm going through some details here, because we got Cy visiting us. Liz's husband is joining us today, and we're glad to have him with us, but I want to walk people through the process. After we check in, we do a quick take AIM. So what area of focus do you want to, what area of your challenges that you, do you want to focus in on for this week's, these next 2 weeks' conversation? So take a minute and get really clear on what you want to take AIM on.
And the taking AIM doesn't have to be on the session that we're on.
It can be anything. Thank you for reiterating that, Leslie. I appreciate that. So it's something that is challenging for you right now that you really want to try to take AIM on.
Well, one of the things, the thing that I'm going to take AIM on, and which has been on my list for a while now, and I still haven't gotten to it, which is just kind of ridiculous, is to create some systems and structures for Patrick, because I know that he can't do it at this point, and so it still is about that planner that I talked about a while ago. Mm-hmm. So that's my AIM.
Okay, great. Anybody else?
This is Elizabeth. I would like to take AIM at just my own responses and reactions when my son lashes out at me, which is quite often, especially when I try to remind him that it's time to make transitions, or it's, you know, off the computer to other things, mainly homework. Just controlling my, because, you know, he's fond of telling me to fuck off now, and and to shut up and things like that, and those things really trigger me, and I oftentimes end up making the situation worse, so I need to work on that.
Right, okay.
Sorry for the four-letter word.
Liz, what about you?
I'm going to be focusing on compassion
and I think folded into that, not taking things personally will definitely help me with that goal.
Okay. Is there a particular challenge area that you want to apply this to?
Yes, I have set up a parent-teacher conference for this next week, and we're receiving feedback that is a little disappointing, so I think I need to kind of get my perspectives reset and come to terms that things aren't progressing the way we'd like them to, and approach it with compassion rather than anger. It's going to be a much better way to handle this.
But it sounds like it might be an opportunity also to have some compassion for the teacher, which is always makes things easier when we're challenged with the parent-teacher conferences.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Meredith, what about you? What do you want to take aim on?
I want to know and think how to articulate this. I mean, in an ideal universe, I want to find the thing that helps motivate my child to operate at the next level, but I don't know that I can do that. So then I need to know, I struggle with, and I think I said this last week as well, or whenever it was, that I struggle with sort of accepting his performance and letting him sort of live with the consequences and or penalizing him in some way for obvious underperformance in an effort to motivate him, but that doesn't work either. I feel like sort of I'm just hamstrung. Like there's nothing I can do. And so I have to just sit there and sort of, you know, if he gets a bad grade, and he'll, you know, he's always disappointed if he gets a bad grade. And I'm kind of like, well, yeah, I'd be disappointed too, you know. Maybe you should have studied. Studying might have helped. I mean, that's kind of how I react at this point. I just don't know what to do. And I don't know if there's anything to do. And then I feel like I'm not even parenting. Like I'm just kind of letting him live with whatever happens.
Yeah. And it makes it difficult. Because you want the best for him. And then that you feel like he's got control, but he is not taking it. And he has this possibility that he's not taking advantage of, and it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple things for you to think about as we're talking through this. You mentioned about getting him to the next level. I think that that's a great question to ask, and I would encourage you to clarify it and get really clear about what the next level is. You know, so if you look at where he's at right now, what is he able to do independently right now? Even if you're just taking one area like homework, you know, is he able to capture the information? Is he able to bring the materials home? Is he able to get started on his own? Is he able to stay focused and complete things on his own? Is he able to, you know, so really do an assessment and say, where is he at right now and what would the next level be? Because a lot of times what we do is we compare them to where their peers are or where the finish line is. Instead of stepping back and going, okay, this is where he's at right now, what would the next level be? You know, and tackling it from one particular area instead of all the different pieces all at once. Does that make sense, Meredith?
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't make it easy because it's frustrating because you want them to be at the finish line. But if you can find one thing to tackle and help, you know, create a structure and a system and a process that will help him to be successful in being a little bit more independent on one particular area, then a lot of times that can be a great motivation in and of itself because he'll see, oh, wow, I was able to do that piece of it myself. So let's talk about this week's topic, which is not taking it personally. And it sounds like, Liz, you did a little looking ahead. Everybody did. We got the email, right? And I really love this section, and I think it's a great tie-in to, you know, the conversation about compassion is, you know, I think not taking it personally is one of the tools that enables us to have compassion because instead of it being about us, you know, it can be focused on them. And it's so human, it's so normal to take things personally. And I would raise my hand and say I'm definitely one of those people that tends to take things more personally. And it's taken a lot for me to really learn and understand that, you know, it's not about me. If my kid doesn't get an A in science, it's not because I'm a bad mom. It's not about me, and it's not my fault. And it's really important to be able to kind of create that boundary. And I think it really is one of the key things that helps us to help our kids is if we've got this shield up that it's not personal. Because the minute it becomes personal, we tend to get triggered. And the minute we get triggered, we shut down. And the minute we shut down, we stop parenting effectively. And so not taking things personally is a great tool to help avoid the triggers because they come really easily. And I love this. I'm going to read this out of the letter, the lesson for today. It says, you know, it's completely normal for people to resist taking responsibility when they realize that they screwed up. You know, it really is normal for our kids to say, oh, it's not me. If you would have had, and I can tell you my 15-year-old has said this so many times, you should have told me to blah, blah, blah so that I didn't screw up, right? Even if it's something that I didn't have anything to do with. We get blamed for everything. You know, you should have told me that I would miss the bus if I didn't get up before 2 minutes before the bus was going to be there. Well, yeah, I did wake you up several times or what, you know, whatever it is. And so it's really easy for people to throw blame, but it's when we catch it that's the problem. And then we throw blame at ourselves. So it's really helpful, I think, to figure out, and I think this works in almost any situation. It's like when our kids get emotionally intense and they yell at us, so they, you know, your son's calling you bad names. It's really easy to take that personally. But if you can find a way to create a boundary between you and the situation and say, my child is having an emotionally intense moment right now. My child's really angry, and it's normal response when you get really angry to shout mean things. That's a normal response. It may not be socially acceptable, and it may cause them problems in relationships moving forward, but it is a completely normal response. And so it's not because you're a bad mom, and it's not because you deserve it, and it's not because they're screwed up. It's just a really normal, natural reaction. And so it gets back to the fact that we can't control what happens to our child in difficult situations, but we can control our responses. And if we don't take things personally, it really does enable us to handle things much more objectively and to stay out of the trigger. So what comes up for all of you guys with this topic of not taking it personally?
So then what is the response? We don't take it personally, but then what do we do?
I think it goes back to, for me, it goes back to having compassion. So I'm not going to take it personally. I'm going to see this as a normal reaction. This is a completely normal reaction given where this child is at right now. And what do I want to do about it? You know, so it's not my fault. I can still act on something even if I'm not taking personally. You can take responsibility for something without taking things personally. Does that distinction make sense?
Yeah, so maybe could acknowledge the where he's at, he or she, and then give him, like, say, when you've calmed down, then let's talk.
Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense that you're really upset right now. I can see you as upset. How can we help you calm down? I mean, when you're using the emotional intensity piece of it, if you don't take it personally and you aren't offended, suddenly, once we're offended, we're all about taking care of ourselves, right? Because the energy has shifted. I've been offended. This is about me. You have to take care of me. I have to feel better. And that's, taking offense is a normal reaction. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that if somebody's going to yell at you and use the language that Elizabeth described, you know, it makes perfect sense that you would take it personally and you wouldn't be offended. But if you can create that space and say, you know what, this isn't about me. This is about them. He's having a rough day, or he's really emotionally intense, or I can't, you know, I'm not surprised that he said that he does get this intensity, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, it's the same thing with our spouses. You know, if every time your spouse does something unkind, you take it personally as opposed to, wow, they're just having a really bad day.
I do. I'm trying not to, though.
Yeah. It's hard not to. It's hard not to because it's all about us. I mean, that's the normal reaction. It's all about us. But the goal in not taking it personally is to have enough objectivity to be able to respond instead of reacting. What about anybody else who comes up about not taking it personally?
It's Elizabeth. I think a lot of the ability to do that as a parent for me depends on what's going on with me. Sometimes I have the capacity to do that. A lot of the times I just don't. You know, if I'm having a bad day, or I didn't sleep well, or I didn't eat right, or whatever, and I'm, you know, pretty sure I'm ADHD myself, so there's that to deal with. But I do think each time is situational, and so sometimes I think that's going to have for me to be able to respond like that out of choice rather than triggers is going to take some self-inventory. And I'm not sure I can do that in the heat of the moment, but it's certainly something to aspire to.
Yeah, no, and you're right. It's a great observation because we do get, you know, we get in the heat of the moment and it's difficult to even look objectively at where we're at. A lot of times we don't even know we're triggered when we're triggered, and it's too late, for lack of a better word. You know, so I think it's part of it is consciousness and self-awareness. And so it's about noticing, while I'm really tired right now, maybe this isn't the best time for me to try to work with my child on it, putting a system and structure in place for making sure that their homework is done. Maybe I need to wait till I have more energy. You know, maybe I need to go take 10 minutes and cool off. But you're right, it's hard to do that in the heat of the moment. And so I think a lot of our kids are at the age where we can begin to create a deal with our kids. You know, so I think that part of this is, you know, if we're not going to parent from threat mode, then we don't try to interact with our kids when they're in threat mode. And so, you know, is there a way to say, okay, you know, you're really upset right now, I'm really upset right now, you know, let's call each other on it. I still, my daughter who's 13, I came in Sunday and something was bugging me, and I snapped at her about something, and instead of, you know, getting really offended, she looked at me and she goes, wow, I don't think this is about me, Mom. I think you're having a rough day. And she gives me a kiss and she walks off. And that was it. And that was all I needed. You know, it was one of those sort of, she didn't take it personally and it helped me. But she's at a point where we can have conversations about not taking it personally. And I think that our kids can help us because they can sometimes be mirrors for us as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, Elizabeth, what do you want to do in those moments where you do feel triggered and you're not quite there?
I've had conversations with Ian. You know, he likes to say, "I hate you, Mom, I hate you." And that always really hurts my heart and my feelings. But one time we had a conversation, and he said, "Oh, Mom, you know, when I say that, I don't really mean it. You know, it's just the way I need to respond. It really means I love you." So I need to remember that it's not about me. It is about him.
It's hard because his words are pretty strong.
Yeah, well, he's a very intense kid, extremely intense. And I guess I am an intense person too, and it's really a challenge, you know.
If you were going to give him the benefit of the doubt, if you were going to believe what he said, what would that mean for you?
That he really hates me, you mean?
No. If you were going to believe what he told you that it didn't mean. Sorry.
Well, I'll tell you, that's the problem. I really do believe he hates me in those moments.
Let's go that way for a second. So what would it mean if he did hate you?
I don't know. I mean, I know he does, actually. I know he does in those moments because I'm like his conscience, you know, that he doesn't want to hear, or his normal brain that he can't accept. And it's
right.
Time to get off the computer.
Right. So he does hate you. So what? So what if your child hates you for a moment?
Yeah, I know. Because I know he always comes around eventually. I know that. So, there are times when I can say, yeah, well, I think it's more recent. Actually, it's just more recent that when he says that, I don't react. And I have to admit that sometimes I retort back. I say, well, you know, I'm not exactly fond of you right now either. You know, which I wish I wouldn't say that, but it's true, you know.
Well, and this is the reality of it, is that being human means that sometimes we say things we don't mean. And that's one of the beauties of this tool, is that if we know that sometimes our kids say things that they don't mean, or sometimes they mean things for just 2 minutes and then they don't mean it again, you know, but it's about the not taking it personally gives you the shield.
Yeah, I guess I need to get into more of the mechanics of that, because it's just so easy to say that. Well, I'm not, you know, I'm just not going to take this personally. But how the heck do I do that? And I know that one of the other callers asked that earlier. It's like, okay, how do I do that? And so maybe it bears repeating. How exactly are we to remember not to take responsibility when my child is screaming at me in the face?
Right. So it's about telling yourself something else. So the story that you've created, moment. So your child says something bad, there's a story that you create. Oh, I must be a bad mom because he told me he hates me. Or, oh, my child hates me. This is really terrible. So there's something that you're telling yourself in your head that's causing you to feel offended, right? I'm taking it personally. Yeah. So it's about coming up with another, and the reality is that the stories are all made up, because, you know, we can't know what's going on in our kid's head. We can't know half the things that are going on. So it's about coming up with something else that you can tell yourself in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my child is really intensely angry, and it makes perfect sense that they would say something mean in that moment. It doesn't mean that they don't love me. You know, whatever it is, but it's about coming up with something that you believe, you're willing to consider is true. Yes, in this moment he hates me, but he won't in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Or he told me he loved me last week, so he must love me. Or, you know, it's about creating a story, and it's not just when your kids yell at you and say things that are inappropriate, but it could be when they get an F. My moment was, you know, they get an F in band. It's like, how can my child get an F in band? You know, it's it's easy to take that personally. It's under my watch. How could that happen under my watch that he would get an F in band? Well, it happened. It's a normal reaction to the things that happen. Can I act on it? Yes. Can I do something different? Yes. Do I have to take that personally as if I'm bad because it happened? No. Other thoughts from folks?
It's Elizabeth again. I think what's coming up for me as I'm listening to you is that I think an extension of the difficulty with that is just interacting, having the rest of the world be like that. The rest of the world doesn't react like that. And I feel like I'm always trying to get my kid involved in the external world, how, you know, like, you got to be this, you got to do that at this time and this time. And so I think maybe the larger picture is worrying about what other people are going to think, you know. My kids...
So we do take it personally because we want to change it because we don't want anybody else to judge us.
I think so. I think that's a big part of it. Is feeling that pressure from the outside.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense because that's a completely normal reaction when we see the world judging that we want to be engaged and be personal. And it's just that there's a subtle difference between striving to change things and taking them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the piece is that you know, even in that judgment situation, it's like, well, if somebody judges you, somebody listens and says, oh, wow, I can't believe your kid did X, Y, and Z, you know, maybe that's the opportunity to not take it personally as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to loop back to Liz because she was the one who originally said she wanted to not take things so personally. How does this resonate for you?
It really resonates because we do have those times when our daughter gets very emotional and overwrought and upset in a situation, and she'll say, I hate this family. And it's hard to not react negatively to that. And to try to discuss it at a later time when we aren't emotional and try to outline what's going on that's making you angry and discuss that there are things we can change, but there are things that we can't change at this time. And we all have to try to be a team rather than fighting amongst ourselves. So I think just trying to not let her anger trigger me and to try to turn it into something positive at a later time is my goal.
Awesome. You know, what's coming up for me as you said that is, I don't know if any of you listened to Dr. Tom Brown's webinar a couple weeks ago, that he was talking about emotional flooding and about how what happens in the ADHD brain is that the emotion is so intense that it kind of blocks out every other emotion. And so, you know, the example he gave was a dad, you know, an ADHD dad who loses his cool and yells at everybody in the house. And the part of him that remembers that he loves his family and doesn't want to hurt their feelings is blocked out by this intense emotion, and it's literally a neurobiological thing that goes on. And it makes perfect sense that it's in a moment, and it happens for all of us whether we're ADHD or not, but it's that when you're in that threat mode, it's so intense, the emotion is so intense, a part of you that forgets that, wow, this would hurt somebody else, or the part of us that knows, hey, I'm feeling hurt, I want to hurt somebody else, they get balanced out, and it's a normal reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're getting close to our time here. I want to give everybody a chance to kind of wrap things up and make a commitment to what they're going to focus in on moving forward. So the four questions we ask at the end of every session are, what did I learn or get clear about today? How can I apply this to my life right now? What is a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success? So take a minute and answer those questions, and we'd love to hear from a few of you what you took from today's call and what you're going to do with it. Who wants to go first? Leslie? Yeah, Cricket, do you guys all processing?
Yeah, I am.
Meredith, where are you at?
Well, I don't feel like I have as much of a taking it personally issue, fortunately. So, I mean, I just need to figure out, I still need someone to sort of give me a formula to follow to I still don't know, I guess, how to feel, really.
So how have you been feeling?
I guess I'm just always have this moderate level of disappointment.
Mm-hmm. And how's that working for you? Well, you sound like Dr. Phil.
Obviously not that well, or I wouldn't be on this call.
Right. So you've got this mild level of disappointment. So if you were going to choose something other than disappointment,
yeah, then I get the other thing just becomes resignation, right? So that's where I'm just like, because
I got to tell you that resignation energetically is more productive than resentment.
Oh, I'm sure, but it's also kind of just stagnant and just unproductive.
Okay. So the energy level that's a little bit higher is to focus on how to help your child.
Yeah, I know, and I feel like, literally, though, I feel like, I'm sure everyone on this call feels like, I feel like I do that every minute of the day that I'm with him. I really do. I feel like I am constantly, since the day he was born, focused on helping him. getting him every kind of help I could possibly find for every single issue that I identified along the way, coaching him, positive strokes, being really straightforward and direct in a kind way, maybe being not unkind, but very direct, because he's old enough to hear some things, offering any help I can give. I mean, there's very little we haven't done for this kid. And again, he's not like this horrible failure of a human being, but he's definitely not living up to his potential either.
Well, and so I mean, I'm hearing what you say is that you don't, you know, you want to know how to feel, and you want to embrace an emotion that's going to help you to move, to be more productive. And it's frustrating because you spent so much energy trying to help him. Because it's exhausting, because you feel like you've been spending your life and every moment of your day propping him up.
Other people get to just, you know, I mean, everyone has their thing, but, you know, a lot of other families just get to enjoy their time with their kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't always feel like I'm just enjoying my time with my kids at all.
Yeah. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating. So I can't remember, Meredith. Are you doing some one-on-one work?
Yeah,
with Elaine already.
We are.
Okay. Well, and I'm happy to spend some time. You know, since I was part of this conversation today, I'm happy to spend some time, maybe a session or something with you to kind of work through this specifically if you want to do that. But I think it's part of this for all of us. I think the first step is in understanding that we do have a choice in how we want to respond. And a lot of times it doesn't feel that way, but it's kind of like what I'm hearing from you, and I think that this is where a lot of us get to, is kind of like, I know I don't want to respond the way I've been responding because it's not working, but I don't know what else to do. And it's a difficult place to be in because you don't know.
Right.
I would encourage you to
do you drop the baseline of your expectations for your child? You know, is that what we do? We just say, all right, you know, they're just going to turn out being, you know, a third less than they could be. And I know this all probably sounds obnoxious or whatever,
it's hard because you know you're coming to the logical conclusion that if he's a third of where he should be now, that he's going to be a third of where he should be when he's 22. But the reality is you don't know what's going to happen when he's 22. So you do what you can now to help him to get to the next level, into the next level, into the next level. And most people catch up. I mean, that's what they say. Most people catch up with some, you know, they either find a career that's really well aligned with the way their brain works, or they, you know, find systems and structures that support them in terms of managing their executive function challenges. You know, look at people like Albert Einstein. I mean, he clearly didn't get school. He had a difficult time being successful, and he was able to, he hired people to do the things that he couldn't do easily, and he did the things that he did brilliantly. You know, and so
atomic bomb.
What's that?
And he invented the atomic bomb.
I don't know that that's completely true, but that's one of the things. So, it's about finding the story to tell yourself, Meredith. And I'm pointing at you, but I think this is true for all of us. It's like about finding the story to tell yourself that's going to get you to a place where you can continue to take action. And we get stuck because we feel like he's never going to make it, nothing's going to ever change, it doesn't matter how much I help him, you're going to get stuck, and it's a normal reaction to be stuck. If you can find something you're willing to consider is true and try something different and try something more and keep, you know, being creative, and I think, you know, I heard you say that you focus on helping him so much. What a lot of times we need to do is to get help for ourselves, and that's great that you're doing that. We're here, we're getting help, and you know, trust the process and keep doing the work and keep moving it forward. So anyone else want to share their commitment for this? Cricket. Nobody's saying anything.
I picked up on something you said, Diana, about building a shield. And I'm going to work on building my shield. And I really have no idea what that means, but building a shield of not taking it personally. I'm just going to put that phrase in my mind and see what I can do around that. Because I do think sometimes we need to back off or protect ourselves. And I think self-care has a lot to do with that. And I don't know what else. Changing the story is a big one, I think. So I might go back and review that, but I do think a lot of the times it's what I'm telling myself in my head, that I am spinning my wheels and I'm worrying about the future and so on and so forth. And sometimes I've noticed if I just get away for a day or two, that helps. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna work on building that shield of not taking it personally.
That's great. Yeah, it's create a visual to go with it, which is that, you know, it's kind of like you've got some armor up that you put up whenever,
exactly.
You know, the
exactly.
Yeah.
It's an invisible buffer. It's not made out of metal. It's not anything that a man would use. It's something that I would use that's soft and squishy and helps me feel better. But I am not. I really don't want to take responsibility. I don't want to take it personally, is what I'm saying. And yet I still want to be effective. So there's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere.
Great. Okay. Anyone else before we close off? All right, good work, everybody. We will talk to you in 2 weeks. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane.